This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm Jackie P.
And I'm John T.
So we finished up our series on the five traits of functional adulthood.
Right.
But this one goes into, I think, really well coming from that series. We're going to do just a two-part series on this one, on the front door and the back door of recovery.
Yep.
So today we're going to start talking about what it means to come through the front door and learning how to do recovery in the front door instead of a side door or some other way.
Yeah. This is a concept that I'll use a lot with clients, especially when they are, when they're feeling a lot of fear about the outcome or a lot of fear about what the future is going to be.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell them our goal in therapy, regardless of what the outcome in your relationship is going to be with your job, whatever, our goal is going to be to get you going in and out of the front door on whatever changes need to be made. So owning that the change needs to be made, owning your feelings around it, owning your responsibility in it, and being able to feel, for me, kind of that front door is being able to feel settled and centered going forward.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, sheepish, traumatized, having to sneak mm-hmm. around. And
which I think is part of being a functional adult, right? And we talked about this in the series, owning your own reality, being able to own your adult needs of needing and wanting,
mm-hmm.
and then the last one, expressing your needs in moderation.
Yeah.
So several of those adult traits are necessary, and these two kind of, if we had a Venn diagram, they would overlap each other, that as we're learning to do our recovery through the front door, we are also learning to be functional adults, mm-hmm. and we are behaving and acting as functional adults.
Mm-hmm.
So these two really start to support each other.
Which I think at first when we start to outline like what some of those functional adult behaviors might be, like
uh-huh.
if you're worried about a social situation or you're worried about an interaction with a coworker, to make it very apparent what the worry is and make it very apparent what your emotions are.
Yeah.
When I'll start doing some what ifs with clients around things like that, I usually get a look like, are you crazy? Like, why would I just say that? Why would I say
I'm
scared?
Let them know what I feel. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I had a client that I was talking with just last night about something that was going to come up in a joint session, you know, and that this client was trying to get either me or you to kind of bring it up, even
right.
though it was the client that was bringing it up. And, you know, as the client was talking about this, the client finally just said, okay, this sounds really manipulative, what I'm saying. and then they just came to the realization, I think I need to do this.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I think that would be best for you, for the entire situation. But it was, you know, one of those. I mean, the client obviously had some nervous energy around it,
mm-hmm.
which still happens even for functional adults.
And it wasn't an easy conversation.
Right. But being able to get to that place of saying, no, actually, I think I just need to say this.
Yeah. Yeah. We've heard people say before, as they get more practice being a functional mm-hmm. adult and going through the front door and more things, saying, this actually feels really good.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we have a hard time imagining, that living that way would actually feel good. Because
right.
when we're living the other way, when we're living in our adult child traits, thinking about being honest about our feelings, being forthright about our needs, wants, and desires, that sometimes feels like the most awful thing in the world.
Yeah. I was telling you about another client that I was meeting with last week who has been practicing being more adult and acting in a functional, mature ways, and had had several experiences at work that previous week where he had to act as an adult, and said to me in the session, after one of those experiences where he was being, you know, kind of going through the front door and being direct about, this is what I want, and this is what I need, and this is what I'm needing from you, and this is my decision, And just really owning that. And he said afterwards, I just thought, I like this. This feels great. Even though it was difficult to do,
yeah.
The aftermath, and we talked about how, yeah, kind of going through the front door and owning your story and owning who you are is liberating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when we take the back door on things, we're always looking over our shoulder waiting for the hammer to drop. We're always waiting for something else to happen because we're not attacking the problem or the issue in a direct way.
Uh-huh. We're being kind of squirrely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's I think it's a in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about being catapulted into this fourth dimension of existence.
Right.
And I think this is one of those aspects of the fourth dimension when we're upfront about what's going on, there's usually not nearly as much anxiety and worry and fear going forward. And I know for me, when I started practicing that consistently, it was like, life feels like it's missing something. Like there should be something else coming, right?
Right. The chaos. Oh, right. It's missing right. Chaos.
The chaos is gone. which I would say that takes some getting used to.
Right. Because often with addiction, there is somewhat of an addiction to chaos too. Mm-hmm.
The nervous system we can see in brain scans, we can see in anecdotal evidence that the nervous system sets its thermostat pretty high mm-hmm. when we live in chaos. And
the chaos can help cover or distract from some of the more painful emotions and painful issues that have to be worked through.
Mm-hmm.
And so that chaos can serve a purpose,
mm-hmm.
but it's a hell of a way to live.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a few different fronts I see where learning how to go in through the front door is really important. First, let's maybe talk a little bit about going through the front door on our own emotions, feelings, wants, and needs, uh-huh. and what that looks like.
Okay.
And what that transformation looks like. So yeah, start, Jackie.
Okay. So one of the stories that comes up for me about this, I have four girls, I've said that before, and my daughter number two and daughter number three are fairly close in age.
Mm-hmm.
It was not planned that way, but I often just say daughter number three, you can't have a lot of plans with because she likes curveballs.
No, so that's true.
She has been a curveball since her conception. I'll just say that. So, and daughter number two is kind of sandwiched between these two pretty strong personalities. And I'm not saying that daughter number two doesn't have a strong personality, but she's also pretty sensitive
mm-hmm.
and is a fairly compassionate and empathetic soul, I think she's taken some beatings from daughter to number one and three.
Yeah.
But so one of these days, it was kind of becoming warmer weather. And my daughter number three had said to me a while before, like, hey, I've outgrown some of my shorts from last year, so I need some more shorts. And she had just said, I want this brand. I need this size. If you could just pick some up for me. So I came home, and daughter number two and three were both in the kitchen. And I came in the door and said, oh, hey, I got these shorts for you. Here they are. And, daughter number three was like, okay, thanks, and went up to her room. And daughter number two kind of stood there, and she looked at me, and she was like, why didn't you get me shorts? And I was like, oh, do you need shorts? And she was like, yes. And I said, okay, I didn't know that. Just tell me. And she was like, I don't want to have to tell you. And I said, why? And she was like, I just liked it when I was little and you just knew what I wanted and you just bought it for me. And I was like, okay, but that's also when I was still dressing you.
Right.
And I knew what you needed because I put your clothes on a daily basis. And I'm not going to do that still today. And that would be weird if I did that, right? And she was just like, but it was so much easier then. And we had this discussion about, right, but as adults, like, it's your job to say, hey, Mom, this is what I need, and trust that I'll care to meet that need.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's more vulnerable. In that way, it was easier when you were three and I just said, this is what you're wearing today.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew when you outgrew clothes or the clothes wore out. And so I would get new ones and they just magically appeared in your drawer. But that's not really functional as an adult. And so, yes, it is more vulnerable to say, this is what I need. Could you meet that need for me.
Yeah, there's that real scary middle part, right? Mm-hmm. I put myself out there. Is somebody else going to come and meet me there?
Right.
In that.
And that you have to think about, what are my needs, yeah. right? And so, you know, I'm like, yeah, it puts the responsibility back on you to go through your clothes and say, oh, these don't fit anymore. And this, I need more of this, or I don't like this anymore. And I think I want this style of shorts, or whatever that is. It puts more ownership back on the individual mm-hmm. rather than, you know, me as the mom to know all of that and just define that for her.
Yeah. In a lot of my, or in some of my recovery, that's been a pretty important thing to look at. And probably even some of the harder work that I've done, just getting to know what I want
uh-huh.
and why I want it and when I want it. And I realize a lot of that comes, and I think for a lot of people in recovery, a lot of that comes from being needless and wantless mm. growing up. Like, there's only so much room for needs and wants. And mm-hmm. most of the time when a family's set up that way, it's the kids' needs and wants that are really
driving things.
Yeah. And so we learn that when we watch adults, that adults become needless and wantless, that it's right. all about what.
Yeah. Adults don't get Christmas gifts
right.
because it all goes to the kids and there's only so much money at Christmas time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think some basic ways to start practicing some of that needing and wanting, something that I try to practice on a regular basis. If I'm going to get food, it's not just about what's close or what's convenient.
Or what's on the dollar menu.
Right. Right. Take a moment and think, what do I really want? What do I really need?
Uh-huh.
And am I willing to do what it takes to do that? And if I'm not, then I can eat a sad dollar menu lunch, but I need to own that.
Right.
That I chose that.
Right. Yeah. So I think there is that piece of vulnerability that people feel, right? And not owning your needs allows you to blame other people if your mm-hmm. needs aren't met, versus blaming the self
mm-hmm.
and saying, I'm not willing to drive 10 minutes to get what I want.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to maybe, you know, you would never do this, but to blame my wife that didn't pack my lunch, right? And to put that on her, like, I have a need for lunch and it's your responsibility to pack that lunch for me.
Thank
versus
you.
It's my fault that I won't pack my lunch or go to get my lunch.
Thank you for the generous assumption. I really appreciate that. There's another side of that. So we've kind of talked about the needs and wants and putting those out there. I think another front door issue that a lot of people struggle with is how to say no in a complete and responsible way.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times we have a group of friends that we do things with as a couple, and it's not always everybody together, but uh-huh. sometimes it is. And usually in the spring and the fall, we go up to my in-laws' cabin in Bear Lake, and we spend a weekend there
okay.
as a family. And often we'll invite somebody along. You know, usually a friend, a couple, and their kids will come along too. For about, I think, 3 springs and falls in a row, we invited one couple along because our kids
are... Like the same couple?
The same couple, okay. yeah. Because our kids are kind of the same age, and we had fun with them, and...
They had passed the test.
This spring, we started talking about it, and I said, why don't we invite this other couple? And then there ensued this long discussion about how, like, was that the right thing to do? Did this couple that we'd gone with previously, did they have the right to go? And if so, like, what was the story that we needed to tell them about why this other couple was invited and they weren't? And, you know, we went back and forth for probably 15 minutes on this. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why does this have to be so complicated? Like, did we sign a document that said
right.
we're going to do this?
Because we've invited you 2 years in a row, we always have to invite you.
Right, right. I think sometimes that saying no responsibly, there can be, at least for me, there's such this set pattern of, like, no means someone's going to be mad at me.
Uh-huh.
Or no means I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing. There can be such this automatic set pattern that we try to find a way to say no without saying no.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, let me check my calendar, or I don't know, I might be busy, or I think I can do that. And then we call ahead right before and say it's not going to work out. Like,
right.
Rather than taking the accounting in the moment and taking stock of what we can and can't do, or will and won't do,
uh-huh.
and making those no's honest. I think for a lot of the people in recovery that I work with, straight out no's can be a really hard part about going
yeah.
in the front door.
Well, we recently on our business Facebook page had a meme or a picture on there that kind of got a lot of traction. Like people were sharing it, people were liking it, and it just said, "No is a complete sentence." And anytime, right? Like, I mean, I've gone through this before too. Like recognizing that all I have to do is say no, and you start to see the other person maybe gets a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I start to feel a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like there should be something after that, right? And a lot of times, I mean, sometimes we may offer something up after that. But a lot of times what happens is we say no and then we start hustling.
Yep.
And we start kind of doing this song and dance and it weakens our no, right? What comes after the no should only support and strengthen the no, not kind of like where we start to get kind of wonky about it and are like, well, maybe I shouldn't have said no. And I'm starting to like apologize, mm-hmm. which takes back my no. Mm-hmm. And so I might start to go through the front door, but then I get so weird about it. Like I back out and I shut the door and mm-hmm. start to go through a sideways door.
Or we try to make that no somebody else's no.
Yeah.
I would, but.
Right.
I like that no is a complete sentence. Uh-huh. And I also think on the receiving end of a no, that can be hard to receive a straight out no.
Right.
I think it's appropriate in going through the front door, an appropriate follow-up question could be, can I ask why?
Right.
Or can you help me understand why that's a no?
Uh-huh.
I think for so many of us and in so many families, no was like the get out of my face, I don't want to talk to you option.
Right.
That when we hear a no, we put our tail between our legs and it's like,
yeah.
That person was mean to me.
Where whether or not the no was screamed, no felt like it was a screaming
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. So I think when we're on the receiving end of the no, going through the front door looks like maybe seeking some more understanding, not trying to convince mm-hmm. that person, but more
yeah.
trying to understand the context of the no.
Well, and I think when you're on the receiving end of a no and you want to understand why it's a no, you need to communicate even maybe to yourself, which changes some of the energy in which you ask for, can I ask why? But you know yourself, like I am accepting no,
mm-hmm.
right? They have given me an answer. And I am accepting that. And I just would like to understand what's going on mm-hmm. behind the no. But I am in no way going to try to manipulate mm-hmm. as they start to give me their reason that I'm trying to talk them out of it.
Yeah. I think that's actually a relationship affirming, a relationship positive no. You can tell me no, and I'm still going to be concerned about you.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be interested in what you're thinking is, what your feelings are.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to reach back to you and reaffirm our relationship even after yeah. a no.
And that can feel like, I mean, oftentimes, you know, maybe as teenagers we experienced the, you know, when we asked for something, like I would like to go to a concert this weekend. And the answer was just no, because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that no really had no meaning. It had no context. And so no was very vague. Like, well, I'm not going to be able to go because you're in a bad mood. I'm not going to be able to go because you are mad at me. Like, what is the no about? Why can't I do that?
In that context, no is just, no is always mean.
Yes. Or no is just a power issue.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I want to go do this. I'm buying my ticket. Can you tell this was an experience for me?
I'm going to throw out some numbers of which right. daughter it might have
I'm
been.
I'm asking nothing other than permission because you're my parent and I need that.
Uh-huh.
But I have the money. I have the transportation. Like, I'm not going to do anything irresponsible. And the answer is a no. And it's like, why? Like, I'm not yeah. doing anything bad. I'm not doing anything wrong. So, but I never would get an answer. It was just no because
yeah.
no.
Well, and I think that brings up another side of this going through the front door when it comes to our relationships with our emotions. Sometimes that no does mean something.
Right.
You know, like that parent who said no to the concert may have a hard time admitting, I'm terrified of you being in that setting by yourself.
Yeah.
I'm worried you might get hurt.
Right.
I'm worried you might not come back.
Which may say, actually, like, let's go through the front door and talk about that,
mm-hmm.
right? But the parent may not want to feel those vulnerable feelings. Mm-hmm. And so they're just saying, no, I would feel more comfortable when you're at my house.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that aspect of owning our emotions through the front door, when clients will ask me, well, what am I supposed to say in this situation? Usually what that means is, how do I pick my way through this without making the other person uncomfortable or upset? Which I think when it comes to our real emotions and our real feelings, often what we have to say is not comfortable for somebody else.
Right.
Or it's not accommodating to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably not even comfortable to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think emotions spoken out loud become more real and can become more powerful, which there are some emotions we don't want to do that because we don't want to feel more of it.
Right.
And there's other emotions, like the positive emotions, we don't want to speak to it because we're afraid that might pop that bubble and it might go away.
I was just going to say, or like in the example I gave at the opening of this episode, that as we start to speak it, we start to see our issues around it and we start to see where we have to take responsibility for it.
I think that's one of the hardest things about going through the front door with our emotions is we can no longer blame somebody else for those emotions. We can no longer justify those
emotions. We can no longer hand it to somebody else and say, you own this.
It makes us responsible.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, I think that's one of the big reasons why people have a hard time going through the front door often, or going through the front door consistently, because the buck stops with us when we start doing that. I think that's that other side of that. You know, there's a lot of aspects of adult life that I love because there's freedom. I get to determine a lot for myself. I'm also responsible for all the choices that I make.
Right. The buck stops with you.
Right. Right. So I think that's a good place to pause. We're going to come back with our follow-up to this. We're going to talk about the back door. So where we've set this up, where going through the front door can be difficult because we have to own our emotions. And we're going to look at why we go through the back door and what the back door looks like.
So at the end of this episode, we'll remind you that your story matters. Remember, there's something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. Also, on our Facebook page, you can now subscribe to our email list, and we'll send out occasional emails on more things that can be helpful for your recovery and your healing.
Thanks.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.